SBS Radio.
One in three of our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander bubs experience ear and hearing troubles that can make it hard for them to listen, learn, and talk to others. Hearing Australia's Happy program offers free, safe, and simple hearing checks for kids under six or not yet attending full-time school. Give your kids happy ears today. Call Hearing Australia on 134 432 or visit hearing.com.au today.
Did you know the name of the warrior who led the most effective Aboriginal resistance? A resistance that in turn would lead to the largest military mobilisation on Australian soil? And why is the name of this warrior, nor his heroic fight for his country, not acknowledged among other Australian valiant fighters? A new book has resurrected Tonga Longeta, a man who fought fiercely for his country, a man many say should be celebrated as a hero as much as the Anzacs. I am Bertrand Tungandame, and this is the NITV podcast.
On the 7th of January, 1832, there's this incredible scene where these warriors walk down Elizabeth Street, the main street of Hobart, to the governor's house, to government house. And all of Hobart line the streets and they're cheering. And these men have still got their spears and they walk proudly down the street. And it must have been an incredible scene. But there's only 16 warriors left. That's it. And Tonga Longeta was at the head of them. They agreed to peace terms. And whilst we don't know exactly what was said in that meeting, we know from other documents that they agreed to a temporary exile in Bass Strait. And that they were promised they would be able to return to their country. It was a promise that was not fulfilled, at least not for the vast majority. Tonga Longeta spent nearly 6 years in exile on Flinders Island, where he became the overall leader of the remnant tribes there.
That was Nicholas Clements, co-author of the book Tonga Longeta, First Nations Leader and Tasmanian Hero. The book was co-written with leading Australian war historian and frontier war specialist Henry Reynolds. We know that Tonga Longeta and his remnant army were exiled after waging the fiercest Aboriginal resistance to colonization on what is currently known as Tasmania. Yet, till the publication of this new book, we knew little about Tonga Longeta. Henry Reynolds sheds some light on how this freedom fighter was largely forgotten and the need to restore his name.
When we would talk to people and they'd say, you know, what are you writing? And we'd say, we're doing a biography of Tonga Longeta. They'd say, who's that? Maybe 1% of Tasmanians knew of him. So he had been completely forgotten to history. And so we have restored him, I think, to his rightful place.
The book puts the war between colonizers and Aboriginal people of Tasmania into context. When colonizers arrived, Aboriginal people initially avoided confrontation.
One of the problems that the Tasmanians, we call the Tasmanians, the First Nations, the local people, the Indigenous, the Tasmanians have, was not really trying very hard to understand where the Europeans had come from and what their purpose was. What were they doing there? Where had they come from? And for a while, they kept, the strategy was to keep out of their way. And in a place like Tasmania, that's not difficult because it is a very mountainous island with a great deal of forest. So they kept out of the way of the Europeans until they began to expand and take over their hunting grounds. I mean, the hunting grounds were lands that had been created by fire to be open land where they could hunt freely. And this was the land which most attracted the incoming settlers.
But with competition for resources, conflict would inevitably erupt.
So you began to get conflict over land and over access to water. And initially, it would appear that the Tasmanians punished individual Europeans for when they had broken traditional law. I mean, the law of the country. And the Europeans, often deliberately, often not realizing, had broken the traditional law. And so it was appropriate that they be punished in a traditional way as an individual. But that sort of tit-for-tat revenge killing got out of control. And so that you increasingly had killing on a larger scale. And eventually, there's no doubt that the people that we write about were desperately trying to literally stop the inflow of the Europeans and their taking over of all the best land in their own nation.
Nicholas Clement, whose ancestors fought alongside the invaders, explains that Aboriginal fighters were outnumbered, sometimes 1 to 200, but were never defeated.
My ancestors were in fact some of the very first colonists in Tasmania. And whilst it's troubling to discover this, the records show that they were in fact involved in the killings, and two of their assigned servants were killed by Aboriginal people. So they were in the thick of it. Because of the terrible demographic tragedy that occurred in Tasmania, it's easy to assume that white people had the upper hand. They didn't. They really didn't. Aboriginal people had them running scared. They were highly effective, and there was so little you could do to stop them. They didn't have crops or villages that you could burn. You couldn't catch them. And so they did the only thing they could do, which was call a levy en masse, a mass mobilization of the military and the population in a vast military effort to try to crush them, the so-called Black Lion, to this day Australia's largest ever domestic military offensive. And it fails. It completely fails. Of course, many people at the time realised that it was doomed to failure. But it does show just how much Aboriginal people got under the skin of the colonists, how desperate colonists were to be rid of this scourge. And in the end, what brought the Aboriginal resistance undone was not that they were outsmarted. They simply couldn't replenish their population. By late in the war, at the peak of the violence, it was around 200 to 1 that they were outnumbered. So it's absolutely incredible that they were able to put up the resistance they did, and the stiffest resistance of any Indigenous people anywhere in Australia throughout the colonial period.
And the fierce Aboriginal resistance would lead to the largest military mobilization on Australian soil.
We need to understand that people can be both victims and effective resistors. And that's what happened in Tasmania. They were absolutely victims. But they were as effective as the Maoris were, with guns and forts. And yet they never used guns. They used spears and clubs, Stone Age weapons. And they had the colonists terrified. And you do have to, it's very easy to demonize the colonists, but when you do that, you fail to humanize them. These people were terrified. Most of them were convicts who had no choice in being there. They had to go out to work every day, otherwise they would be flogged. And just imagine what it was like to be out there when the hills have eyes and they know that, you know, the neighbor down the road has already lost two convict servants to Aborigines, and they didn't just get speared and die quickly. No, they suffer tremendously at the hands of people who are justifiably very angry.
The Black War is amply documented, but the story of the warriors who fought it remains mostly untold.
We certainly knew that there'd been what was called the Black War in the 1820s, and it's been written about in Tasmania for a long time, since the 19th century. It wasn't a part of our history that was hidden by any means at all. It was, you know, a famous part of our history. But the actual name of the leaders was unknown to the colonists themselves. They just knew they were, you know, there were warriors up there who were attacking and killing people. They didn't know the names. The first time the name was recorded was at the actual end of the war, when the governor of Tasmania, then a man called George Arthur, actually wrote the names down in a dispatch he was sending off to London. And he, for the first time, wrote the name Tongalongata.
The new book arrives amidst a growing debate to recognize Aboriginal warriors and restore them in their rightful place in Australia's war history and memorials.
There's been a debate about this for 30 or 40 years. And that is the surprising thing, that the War Memorial is a very, very important institution in Australia. It gets a very large amount of government funding. It is recognised. There are people who say, you know, this is the heart, the soul of the nation. I mean, it's a bit like the Pantheon in Paris. This is where the national heroes are recognised. But nonetheless, there was absolutely no recognition of the fighting that took place over a very long period of time in Australia between the incoming British and the First Nations people. And this has continued despite the fact that many of the historians who worked at the War Memorial advocated that this should change. Many prominent Australians have argued that this should change. And there's no doubt that, you know, in other countries, in the United States or in New Zealand, there is a recognition that the wars, like the Maori Wars in New Zealand, are an important part of New Zealand history. So there were two fights that had to take place. Now, the first one was the acceptance that the fighting went on for a long time and that very large numbers of people were killed. The acceptance of frontier violence took 20 or 30 years. But having accepted that there was violence, this did not necessarily mean there was an acceptance that this was warfare. You see, it could be considered as a criminality, it could be considered as sort of a piracy, or the killing below the level of the nation state, and that lacked the characteristics of warfare. It lacked the, the political purpose. It lacked the status. It lacked the gravitas of war. But I mean, that too has fallen away, and I think our book just shows how significant this conflict was. But there is still no indication that the war memorial will change.
Tasmania's governor at the time had acknowledged Tonga Longeta and his fellow fighters as worthy warriors and military adversaries, even bestowing them honorary titles.
The person running the show, a man called George Arthur, felt they should have dignified names. And so he gave the tribal leaders the names of kings or Greek heroes. It was a very strange idea, but it was sort of well-meaning. He wanted their status to be recognised.
It is to be remembered that Tonga Longeta and his men were never defeated, and the colonial authorities even considered them as members of an accredited state, yet the moment the war was over, they were forgotten and betrayed.
There's a betrayal at the heart of Australian colonisation, one my co-author Henry Reynolds has written about extensively, and that was that Europeans never acknowledged Aboriginal sovereignty, and they weren't prepared for how hard they would fight for their land, and it gave them no way to treat with these people, no way to arrange terms, allot lands. In the Black War, the resistance was so strong that they had to take them seriously when they were resisting. And they had to treat them. And in fact, they were told explicitly, you need to treat these people as if they are members of an accredited state. But the moment the war is over, the moment the threat is gone, they are forgotten about again. Tonga Longeta deserves to be considered a hero, a war hero. But before we can do that, we first need to acknowledge as a nation that the Black War and other frontier conflicts like it were in fact wars. And whilst the casualty rates weren't as high as our overseas conflicts, they were far more important. They were wars on this country for this country. Unlike, for instance, the Great War, World War I, the war where we're supposed as a nation to have come of age. It was in many ways a pointless war, a bloodbath, an unnecessary sacrifice. And to take nothing away from the individuals who and their courage, but if we're willing to spend millions of dollars on commemorating World War I, why the hell can't we commemorate those wars that were far more important to the history of this country?
That's it for this episode of the NITV podcast. Thank you to our guests, Professor Henry Reynolds and Professor Nicholas Clements. And if you want to listen to more of our podcasts, the NITV podcast and the Our Story podcast, just go to where you get your podcasts from.
One in three of our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander bubs experience ear and hearing troubles that can make it hard for them to listen, learn, and talk to others. Hearing Australia's Happy program offers free, safe, and simple hearing checks for kids under 6 or not yet attending full-time school. Give your kids happy ears today. Call Hearing Australia on 134 432 or visit hearing.com.au today.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.